and welcome back to Surf Splendor. This is David Scales, your host as always. And as promised, I'm bringing you an episode today with Derek Riley and Chaz Smith of Beach Grit fame. Beachgrit.com is their website. Ultra hard surf candy is the tagline. If you haven't been, you definitely need to check it out. It's really, really entertaining and a cool website. And they're both writers. They come from a writing background. Derek established Stab Magazine, I think in 2004, 2005. He details that in this episode. But what they're offering with Beach Grit is really new and unique in the surfing world, and I'm a big fan of it. So we get into that and the reason behind launching it and where it's going and all that sort of stuff in this episode. But before we do, we actually just kick off talking about hot topics. So their bios and kind of intros will come later in the episode. And in fact, Chaz Smith actually has been a guest on this show in the past. He had him on last year when he introduced his book, Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell, which also highly recommended read, takes place on the North Shore, documenting just a lot of the, I don't know, the stories of the North Shore, you know. So that's a really good episode. I'll post a link to it in today's show notes. That was episode number 72, I believe. So I'll post a link to it, and then you can, of course, listen to that to get better understanding of Chaz. Because of that episode, we don't get too much into his background in this episode, but you know, he's still definitely a part of the conversation, and then we kind of unpack Derek Riley's background a little bit more thoroughly in this episode. So if you're new to the show, I assume there's new listeners kind of coming off of Derek's fan base. Welcome. We do an interview profile piece like this every other week, and then in the alternating weeks, we do surf news episodes that are just kind of discussing everything current in surfing. And I do that with my co-host, Scott Bass. So surf news 1 week and then interview profile pieces the next week and, you know, weekly episodes of the show. So that's the format here. Everything is available on surfsplendorpodcast.com. All past episodes are archived. And then everything that we discuss in this show, videos, articles, all those things are all on our website as well. So you can go there and see the visuals that accompany everything that we're talking about in the show. You could also leave comments and engage in this conversation, share your thoughts. And then on social media, we're at Surf Splendor, Instagram, Twitter, all that sort of thing. All right. So if you're listening to the show in iTunes, I encourage you to rate and review the show. That helps other people to find it. And other than that, just enjoy. Share it with friends. That's all that we ask. We'll keep producing the content if you keep spreading the good word. All right? Without further ado, Derek Riley and Chaz Smith. WSL. More Ronnie or more Rosie? You can only pick one. What's your call?
It's easy for me. Derek, I'll let you go first.
Let me think. I love Rosie. I think Rosie's one of the smartest, most beautiful women I've ever met and talked to. We photographed her for Stab Magazine.
I remember.
And she's really into literature. And I had to drive her from the Gold Coast to Byron Bay where we did the shoot. And she knew every book that I'd read. And she'd read some really obscure books. And she was slimmer and more beautiful in person. But I'll take Ronnie.
Mm. Why Ronnie then? You just gave a great sales pitch for Rosie.
Well, I think Ronnie's even more beautiful than Rosie. But Ronnie has a really good understanding of surfing.
Yeah.
And he is so close to telling it exactly like it is.
Yeah.
Within the boundaries of, you know, working for a company that you can't burn your bridges. And I think he does a great job. I'll probably just trim the hair a little bit, lose the Hugh Grant foppish haircut, and maybe tone down the Australian accent, and I think he'd be all time.
Interesting. Chaz.
Yeah, it's funny. I really have grown to like Ronnie this year, I think. He's kind of sounds kind of marbly in the voice, and I don't necessarily like the Australian accent as much as I used to. I really used to like it. It's funny.
Yeah.
I used to love
Did
it
I mind?
Before. I do now because I understand it. It took me forever, literally. I just told Derek, yeah, when he first came over, the first maybe 2 years. I think I wrote for staff for a couple years before ever meeting Derek. Maybe it was just a year. Felt like a long time. It was a lot of stories.
Yeah.
We would talk on the phone every once in a while. I would not understand a word he said on the phone. And so I would just laugh and say, yeah. He would like pause awkwardly and then I'd realize, ooh, I laughed at the thing that wasn't funny or
right,
whatever.
Right, right, right.
But yeah, the Australian accent. Then going to Australia, I really liked it there, I think. But then coming back and hearing Ronnie's. But Ronnie's is pretty good, I reckon, though, yeah? It's not offensive, is it?
For me, it's a little bit strong.
Yeah.
And with Ron, you know when the camera's on him and he can see himself in the monitor.
Yeah.
I wish it was vision right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
A few pounds. Because, you know, if you had a face like that, of course you're going to mug for the
camera.
Yeah, yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
No.
The thing that made me mad about Ronnie, I think, I held a grudge against Ronnie for a while, was the whole Mick Fanning thing. Wasn't it Ronnie? Maybe you don't want to answer. But I think it was Ronnie who was doing Mick's PR. At that time, I think Ronnie had been hired as Mick's PR person.
It might have been around then. I got a feeling it was after though. But
no, I think.
Oh, really?
I think it was. And so I think it was Ronnie who told Mick to plausible deniability and all that kind of stuff with that thing, which always made me think, oh, you're a worthless piece of shit because you like that's the worst advice ever to give somebody. What I mean, I feel the way Mick spun out of that yeah. was the worst way that he could have maybe
sure
in terms of you know like kind of denying and saying that it was I was just you know giving the reporter what he wanted to hear whatever like it was a real muddled kind of message which I thought that's an awful PR spin and so then I felt Ronnie and I saw Ronnie the day after that happened and Ronnie and I kind of knew each other a little bit
sure
and I told him what happened and he was kind of laughed about it and was like oh that's funny and then going and telling Mick to play it that way to me seemed real
right
it just seemed silly and so then I've always held a slight grudge against Ron Blakey so
interesting
I would love to get back with him and say
yeah
Ronnie Blakey was that you
I didn't even know that he played that role with Mick
I think he did I yeah. might be totally it might be real fuzzy
yeah
and my memory is always fuzzy and so it might but I feel pretty firmly that it was him.
Perfect segue to the next question. Is this the most disappointing title race you've ever seen? You got Mick and you got Adriano. Like, for you.
For me, totally.
Yeah.
It's crushingly disappointing. And I would love Adriano to win at this point just
really?
Because I think that Rory God. Wrote it. Didn't Rory write that he would, Rory Parker
yeah, yeah.
on Beach Grit? That just the shitstorm that it would cause if Adriano won would be amazing to watch. Just the amount of vitriol and anger and rage, yeah, directed at poor little Adriano. And Adriano's a nice kid. Have you talked to Adriano?
Yeah, he's a lovely boy.
Yeah, yeah. I really like Adriano personally.
I've grown to love him just like through his post-heat interviews, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, seems really humble, seems to be taking care of a lot of people back at home, all that sort of stuff.
I think Adriano's completely genuine.
Yeah.
He gets very mistreated in the press.
Completely mistreated and doesn't deserve it. I don't know what did Adriano deserve?
Is it in the press or is it just on the internet?
Both, I think.
Really?
I think it'd be rare to find a journalist who was a big fan of Adriano. But I think he's a beautiful surfer and a great, you know, not a great guy because I don't know him that well. But I think he's a fairly compelling figure. But I agree with Chaz and I agree with Rory. That an Adriano world title would not serve the interests of professional surfing.
Right, right.
But as far as the world title show goes down, it's I think it could be the best one ever, like 95, yeah. when Kelly came back, you know, through Sonny and yeah. Machado and stuff to win it. It could be the worst, because I wrote a story on Beach Grit that Felipe could get second last, Mick gets second last, everyone else gets fifth and ninth, whatever. And Felipe
right.
wins the world title, and then there's this scenario. Pipe goes, starts in 4 foot pipe, you know, everyone gets a few waves. Felipe has a couple of backside hacks and a little spinner at the end. The next day is 10 foot. He goes out and doesn't catch a wave. Mick loses in that round for whatever reason. And then Felipe wins the world title with a 0 hit point total.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
All right. You obviously have a relationship with Bruce Irons. You just posted an audio interview with him. Where will he finish in this pipe event?
It's funny because I saw when I was sniffing around for some Instagram footage today, I saw Bruce getting away with a pipe, and he looked really, really good. But whether someone who can surf pipe and is obviously a great surfer can translate that into heat, because it's not going to be 6 foot perfect pipe, probably not, you know.
I mean, yeah. It could start 6 foot perfect pipe.
Yeah, he could. Who knows? I didn't think Mason was going to win a heat at Bell's, and he beat Mick Fanning. And we had it on Beach Grit, so he's not going to win a heat. And I love Mason. He's my favorite surfer. Yada,
totally.
Yada, fundest
totally.
Guy in the world. And but so anything could happen. So and Bruce sounds really good. You know, when I spoke to him, he sounded fantastic.
It seems to me that Bruce, though, if the waves are not pumping, and again, it could be Mason Bell's thing, but I just don't know what his motivation is to paddle for crap waves. Like, I don't know if you're him, who cares? Like, you'd sit out in the water and come in and, I mean, yeah. Unless it's pumping. If it's pumping, though, I give him a good a shot as anybody.
If it's
pumping all the way through, do you think Bruce could win the event? If it's, like, classic pipe?
But
classic, you know, pipe for 3 days.
The surfing heats are so different to going out and just totally. Getting the sets of the day.
Sure, but if it's, like, but if it literally is, like, short interval, whatever, like, there's a lot of waves per heat and it's pumping, I reckon, I mean, would you think that Bruce could win the event? That would never happen.
He could definitely win the event, but you can't discount people like Julian Wilson and Owen Wright, all these guys who, you know, are serving heats day in, day out, and who are amazing at pipe,
yeah.
who've got all the heat savvy, and have got that desire, that focus. I can't imagine Bruce getting into a CT event and having that focus for, whatever it is, six heats or whatever, to win a contest. Great if he won, though, it'd be a hell of a party.
I agree, like, obviously we all want to see Bruce return to form, you know what I mean? But I don't know, I don't see it happening. Just in his previous performances, getting wild cards into various events, including pipe, he just doesn't deliver.
You know? Part of me wonders, though, if this time, I don't even think there was a giant shitstorm around it. It was just starting to swell, and then it feels like the WSL caved before it even reached a crescendo. Like, it was a couple days of, oh, come on, and then a little bit of backlash of, you can't gift wild cards to people. Come on, there's, like, people really hungry for that, and blah, 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 blah. But I wonder if there was enough kind of talk about it where Bruce feels like he has something to prove, slightly competitively, like where he feels like I have to go get a couple scores just to prove people wrong.
I'd love to see that.
The thing with Bruce, he's a physical phenomenon, so he's almost not human. I've seen him and he looks like about, you know, 150 pounds and terrible. Then other times you see him, he looks like he's been lifting weights and a magnificent human species. So I think he's got the ability to transform into whatever, because he is quite a freak, an unrealized freak competitively, I guess.
Agreed.
So who knows? Who knows what Bruce could do?
And even when, like you said, he has
the constitution of a horse, too.
Well, even when he's thinner, I've never seen him out of shape. You know what I mean? Like, he's always fit. Yeah. So, all right. On a 1 to 10 scale, how much interest do you guys have in the Big Wave World Tour?
Probably less than zero. What are you?
You know, I'm going to say I have... are you talking competitively? Like,
exactly.
Actually watching heats? Watching heats, less than zero. Like, watching the bickering that those little housewives do back and forth is amazing to me. That's a... Like, they're all...
On social media?
Totally. They're such macho... I mean, they're modern-day cowboys, as far as I'm concerned, theoretically, right? I'm not that interested in what they do. I mean, in terms of, you know, whatever. Big waves, it's...
It should be called the Burger Takeoff Contest. They find the biggest burger they can, everyone just takes off.
Yeah.
And the person who took off on the biggest burger wins the contest.
Yeah.
It's a very odd event. It's a tour.
It is strange, but what's stranger to me, though, is the hurt feelings and the poking and the rock throwing and the... I mean, yeah, the whole thing about the Titans and Mavericks, like, I mean, how do you kick Twig out of that event, which I don't understand how you do that.
And Pete,
previously. Yeah, I mean, Pete, too, exactly. Yeah. But both of them are, you know, Maverick standouts. Pete's a Santa Cruz boy, and Twig's won the event twice, right?
Totally.
Yeah, and I don't know how you get so, your panties so in a bunch that you kick them out of the event.
Especially on those big thumbs on the phones.
Yeah.
But seriously, I don't know anybody who has any interest in it competitively. You know what I mean? The Big Wave World Tour itself.
I'll write, sometimes when I'm in the mood, I'll write that it's the one thing that'll translate to Middle America is big waves, because people understand you see a little man on a giant wave, but that's not what they do in the competition is the thing, I reckon. Like,
and nobody's going to watch the event.
No. Like, it's one little clip for an advertisement selling Mazda is good to see.
Tag Heuer?
Yeah, sure, Tag Heuer. One little man on that big wave is an impressive visual, but competitively, it definitely doesn't work.
I think it's just the WSL wanting to own every tier.
Yeah.
Because do you get the WSL press releases?
No. Nope.
So they have everything. Someone winning Chopu has the same hierarchy in your email as someone in the first round of the Taiwan contest.
Oh, yeah.
The girls' Chinese longboard contest or something.
Yeah.
So I just think it's them just, you know, owning everything.
Yeah.
You think big waves?
You think they'll come in and try to own Beach Grit Honolulu Bay Invitational?
Yes, we can. Lovely.
So same question on 1 to 10 scale. How much interest do you have in the female world tour?
Oh, I'm probably about a 6.
Okay.
I love watching Carissa. I love watching Steph. A little bit of Lakey. Tyler Wright sometimes. If it's a bit of a runner, I like watching Tyler. But Carissa I could watch way more than some of the men.
Agreed.
Carissa and Steph, those guys are wonderful.
I think I have less interest in the title race of the women, but I have... So like title race for them is like a four, but watching the women's events, it's like a six or seven. I really like watching them surf.
Coco as well. Coco's really good.
Coco's so fun.
Malia is looking great. Yeah. I would say.
Yeah.
I think in some cases their heats are funner than the men's heats.
Yeah.
To watch. But their title race is not as compelling because it just seems like there's a real difference between the top three women.
There really is.
And then the rest of them.
So the men's WCC should be down to 12 servers. The women should be down to three.
Yeah, totally. Which would be amazing.
Incredible.
And if they could slot the women into the, like, really give the women the primo
wildcards.
Exactly. If you slotted them in, I wonder how far away that is from a woman surfing in the men's.
Carissa's done it.
I know she has, but like really doing it regularly and actually knocking men off. Like,
you're pretty good. And beating them in contests,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I agree, though, in that Carissa, head and shoulders, basically, above everybody else on that tour. Like, it's crazy how good she is and just how enjoyable she is to watch. And almost not even... I'd add Stephanie to this, but almost not comparable to the men, in a way that there's just more grace and fluidity and just it's its own thing, you know. It's beautiful. It's like, I'm a huge fan.
The women, you know, Carissa and Stephanie actually have an individuality to their styles.
Very true.
Where the man can be so coached, and because of the very nature of competitive surfing, they have to hit every single pocket and have every single lip. But because there's so much leeway in the women's surfing, because there's three world title contenders or four world title contenders, really, a woman can miss a couple of sections into a beautiful cutty or whatever. So yeah, there's a lot more individuality, I think,
especially at a place like Honolulu where they're at now. It's like that wave allows a lot more, I don't know, you have to pace with the wave specifically. Like, we were talking earlier today about Tyler Wright got a wave where it's just like flow, you know, like no major maneuvers, but just like radical down the line flowing and pumping. She got barreled, she came out, she did a little bit of a turn, she got a good score for it, but there wasn't any like radical surfing on it, you know, whereas the guys don't really get to surf waves like that. They always end up surfing super critical.
Did you watch any of Sunset yesterday?
No.
When was it?
I was watching the women when Sunset ran.
Okay. Yeah. Sunset's such a... every time I see it, it's such a funny wave to watch people compete on, I reckon.
I watched Joel Centeno's like 9-point or 3-point or 8.93, I think is what it was. Yeah. And it was like crazy drop, and then he's out on the shoulder and just does like this cutback into the whitewash that was way out on the shoulder. Pumps, little turn, banks off the whitewash. 8.93.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
Remember that, was it Joanne DeFay? We put a little clip up on Beach Grit and said, is this a 9.8 in women's surfing?
Oh, yeah.
Remember she kind of did one turn and then got on the guts again.
Yeah.
For the inside section, and then I got a stern email from WSL.
Oh,
really?
Did you?
Please remove the video.
Did you remove it?
Yeah. I'm so terrified.
What are you terrified of?
I haven't incorporated the company yet, so
okay.
If we get sued, I get sued.
Okay, well, we'll get back to that in a minute. You guys haven't written about Alana Blanchard in months. What's going on, dude?
She doesn't interest me at all. She seems like a really nice girl, and she's a pretty good surfer, and middlingly attractive, I think.
Well,
you know, we've only wrote about her, I think, when maybe Ashton wrote about the Ashton Goggins, who's now at Surfer Magazine. He wrote about the new picks. I looked at the new picks, enjoyed them briefly, and that's Alana Blanchard for me.
Yeah.
Nice girl. But
I feel like she's fallen off the map a bit.
Maybe, yeah.
There's something about the, and not specifically speaking to Alana, but a little bit, like those surfer girls selling the sex, I love it. I love them being sexy and all that. It's totally great and awesome. But some of them just aren't very sexy.
Mm.
And I think overplay it because they're sexy compared to other surfer girls.
Totally.
And so we'll overplay the sex thing and then accidentally price themselves out of the market because you're not actually crazy, wildly sexy. You're sexy for a surfer,
mm-hmm.
which I think is two different things. Where I think, for example, Coco Ho is way sexier in so many ways. You know, she obviously is athletic and whatever she is, but there's something about Coco's vibe that is way sexier than, say, you know, yeah, one of the ones who's always pushing this kind of overly sexualized
thing.
I'd
say more than Alana.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I totally agree. Has Julian Wilson's engagement to Ashley O dashed his title dreams?
I don't think so. I think Julian's got a title in him, but I think it's going to be, I think he's entering his title prime, not quite yet. He's still a little young, right?
No, he's 27.
I know, but I think I was talking to Bart, Julian's brother, the other day, and
insider trading.
Yeah, I do have insider trading. Bart was looking, I think, at the next, it was either these next 3 years, the year after this, the next three, which historically has been the prime for when the men really, you know, blossom, when they flourish. And yeah, I mean I've been bullish on Julian for a couple years now, but I really think he's going to put it together.
He's phenomenally good. His technique is so good. But then we saw at Snapper when Felipe just made him look stupid.
Yeah, but I just
he looked heavy, and because Julian's such a beautiful technique that you take off, it's a big bump and big hack, and then there's an air when it's necessary. But he doesn't have that take off and fly down the line.
It's true, but I wonder if there's going to be like, I don't know, if he even almost puts a little more like man muscle on where his big turns
he's a big boy,
but even a little bit more like of just that, like, because he really does surf so pretty. And if
you
he's like just
the
like
very big man, huh?
Yeah, I do like a big man. I mean, look at Dane's turns though. Like, yeah. Dane's just curves lightweight where it's just so thick, but it's like that. Was that his turn at Sunset? Where was that?
The Hale Iva.
Yeah,
the recent one.
I mean, was it Hale Iva?
The one from a year or two ago. Hale Iva, yeah.
No, not a year or two ago. It was this year where he just smashed the lips so hard. Like, he almost, Dane, it seems, almost brings equal force as the wave.
Yeah.
Like, where you have however many kilotons of energy coming in.
Yeah.
Where I feel that Julian, with a, not as much as Dane quite, but a bit more of that, I wouldn't be surprised if he could go on a rail, like, tick off three titles in a row.
Like, I agree with your guys' assessment of Julian surfing, and his time is, it's going to happen. But the question is it a distraction? Is getting married a distraction?
I think it's a distraction for Jordy. I think when Jordy married, what's her name?
Lindo.
Yeah, Dream Girl. And Jordy's just so happy, and good for Jordy, happy in love, and that's awesome. But I think I get the feeling for Jordy, the fire went out.
Yeah, Julian's psychotically competitive.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's in Julian's. I don't think it just is who Julian is.
I don't think, you know, when people talk about they have a few world titles in them, whatever, it seems like unless it's Kelly Slater or Andy Irons or Mick Fanning, there's a certain something, and that a lot of those guys just don't have. They can surf amazing, they can be psychotically competitive, but there's just something in those particular men.
Agreed.
And all that matters, they would throw themselves off a bridge for an extra world title.
Yeah.
And you think Julian has it?
I don't know, but I think he would have had a world title by now if he had it.
I mean, we should come back again in 3 years and have this
Derek, you got egg on your face.
Yeah. Or either I'll have egg on my face. Yeah. But I'd really go all in. I'd put my wife's house on on Julian Wilson. And
put my wife's bonus on it.
In 3 years.
So that leads me into Kelly Slater. Like, in talking about distraction, I feel like that's been Kelly's nemesis this year. It's just he's got so much going on outside of competitive surfing. Do you guys think we'll see him in 2016 competing again?
I think he can't stop. I think Kelly's problem is he surfs Snapper. And when they stop giving him a wild card, or, I mean, he'll be on tour by himself. But even if he, like, if his rating doesn't guarantee him a place, if they don't give him a wild card to Snapper, then he's not going to get up for Bells, and then he's like, by then it's he's not going to go to Margaret, and then it's too late. But it's, yeah, if Kelly surfs Snapper, he's going to continue to surf the tour on some level. I think
the tour has been particularly cruel to Kelly waves-wise. I've watched him in probably six contests this year have to surf in the shittiest waves, and it's like, you know, LeBron or someone having to surf in this crappy pothole court against some young hotshot from the area who just knows the court really well, and just watching this great surfer just surfing 2 foot paltry mush. But like, you know, when he went to Portugal, I was going, oh, please don't go to Portugal or France, you're going to surf a horrible heat and shitty waves. And he heard the forecast was good, but he ended up just having those shitty heats.
Yeah.
And it's sad to watch because Kelly belongs in 8 foot Chopu.
Yeah.
But I think the undistracted Kelly would beat any hotshot, any local hotshot on his home court.
I don't think so anymore.
I think so. I think
he's so beatable in 4 foot and under, like against Felipe. Kelly can't beat Felipe in anything under 4 foot.
See, again, I'll put my wife's house on it. If you took curbs,
I'll punch you right in the nose, mister. If you just step out, we are outside.
If we took perps and outer known and everything else away from Kelly and said you have to win one more world title to be the greatest man alive, you just don't do any of this other stuff. Because literally, I'm dangling greatest man alive. Mm. Everyone will give it to you. That he would go win another world title.
I don't think so. I think he's going to be lucky to finish fifth or sixth this year.
This year for sure.
And next year, if he gets fifth or sixth next year, he should be stoked.
Totally, except for the fact that I still think he's got a couple more in him.
But I think to your point, you're right. You'd have to take away Perps and Evernote and all that, because that is the distraction for
him. I think so too.
Sure.
I think that he's not surfing up. He's failing in those conditions, partially because he's been dealt a cruel hand, but also partially because he's not invested.
He's distracted.
I think he'd like to hear that, but I just think his time has passed in 4 foot and under.
See, now he's going to hear that.
And he's going to hate me. And I love the man. I think he's the loveliest man, even though he's liked me and disliked me over the years. And I've never stopped being a fan. Even when I was in Andy Irons' corner, I secretly wanted Kelly to win.
Yeah.
Even if I'd be sitting next to Andy, I hope you win the world title, Andy. Come on, Kelly. And every year I have a hierarchy of who I want to win the world title every year. Kelly Slater, number one since 1992.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all fans. How could you not be? You know, have you guys bought any Outer Known clothing?
No.
Oh, I've never seen it in the store.
Yeah, I wouldn't know where. I would.
Online, probably. I mean.
Yeah. I'm not an online shopper. That's the problem with me. Are you an online shopper?
I never go into stores to buy. Yeah. But I kind of feel weird buying surfish brands without a discount code or some kind of discount.
Yeah.
Only because I just feel fucking odd spending $300 on a jacket when... If John or Kelly was nice, they'd just give me a discount code and get it for $200. I'd do that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I'll stick to Saint Laurent.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's get into Derek.
I sound like a rapper then. I see the Saint Laurent. Yeah. I got my Saint Laurent. I got my New Balance sneakers. Shit. Straight out of CPT.
Let's get into your history a little bit. Tell me about your professional background and the events that led to launching Stab. I know you have writing background, obviously. And,
sure.
Yeah.
I've got a double major in literature and journalism.
Okay.
And when I was 20 or something, I got a job at Surfing Life magazine in on the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
Ended up working with Tim Baker, surf journalist, and edited that mag for a while. And then while I was there, I got poached to start a new magazine in Europe called Surf Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and lived in Hossegor for 2 years and launched Surf Europe. And then after that, I mean, I would have lived in France the rest of my life, but I couldn't get a visa. It's really hard. I should have just, you know, wandered across the border.
Yeah.
Crone baby and shit. and then I came back to Australia and I worked for a big men's magazine there. And while I was there, a friend of mine, Sam McIntosh, two friends of mine, Sam McIntosh and Campbell Milligan, they were working at Waves and they were relaunching Waves and they wanted me to come along and work with them. And I was just kicking around. I was still getting a retainer from Surf Europe, so I thought, it'd be cool, hang out with some buddies. And then I was there for about a year and Campbell went off and did Monster Children and Sam and me spoke about doing a men's magazine. And it was going to be called Beef, and we ended up selling the whole business plan and name and everything to a big publishing company in Australia for some stupid amount of money, and then they didn't want to pay because they didn't like it. And we said, "Cool, we'll just start the magazine ourselves," and they paid. So I thought we'll do a surf mag. And at the time, another friend of mine came to me and said, "You should do a 30th anniversary book for Billabong. Coming to 30 years, it'd be a great business opportunity." So I said, "Yeah, that's a good idea." So we went to Billabong. We said, "It will cost you $350,000 for us to make you 20,000 books." And they said, "Yeah, sure, no worries. Here's the check." Boom.
Really?
And so for the next 6 weeks, I did this book, and we came out of it with a quarter of a mil, and then we launched Stab, and we just fucking mowed through that money.
Yeah.
Just mowed through that money stupidly. Going on stupid trips and giving money to everybody. And you know, some months you go, "You know what? We should just print an extra 10,000 mags. For an extra $40,000 or something." "Yeah, it's a good idea. What do you reckon?" "Yeah, we'll do that." Stab started in 2003, but the first issue was launched January 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was doing Stab, I read Charlie's stuff in Vice magazine,
mm-hmm.
contacted him and asked him to write some stuff for us. And then we had this long relationship, Stab, because I was doing the creative, Sam was doing the business, my business partner, Sam McIntosh. So I was getting chased to write pretty much the whole issue, which is so good for me. Just come in, it was great. We had a lot of political content. We did that for years and years and years. And there came a point in the business relationship with Stab where I wanted to stay friends with Sam and get out, but still do the creative. So I sold out, as it turned out, too early.
Apparently, yeah.
And then, as in regards to that, we can talk about that later. Anyway.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I sold out and kept doing the creative. And then in January 2014, I realized it was time to carve out a piece of online real estate.
Mm.
And I could see that everyone was just aggregating. And there was no...
original.
Only use a buzzword here. Authentic.
Yeah.
Original voice. And I knew how good Charlie was. And Charlie's really good and he's prolific. And I can just sit there and write shit too. So I thought, we can do something. And then came up with the name, got someone in Poland to build the site. And then last August, so August 2014, after me and Charlie had uploaded and done a couple of hundred stories or 100 stories or something, we pressed the go button.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it's been going for 1 year.
Yeah, I've been a big fan ever since.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
We've seen just recently with Stab being purchased by Surf Stitch, like some advertorial changes in the way, like especially on stabmag.com. I don't actually read the print mag. I don't have access to it. But I'm just curious what your thoughts are on how they're doing that and how they've navigated that and integrated Surf Stitch's, you know, objectives into the platform. And
I would turn Beach Grit into one big fucking advertorial for that kind of money.
Would you?
I wouldn't give a shit.
Do you feel like they've lost some? I mean, I feel like they've done it fairly well. I notice it. I don't know that everybody would notice the things that they're doing.
Yeah.
But do you feel like it's like they've lost some integrity in the way that they've done it?
Well, you know, none of us are the Washington Post. You know, so it's just, everyone's just trying to make a buck, and, you know.
I think when I first heard of the marriage kind of between Magic Seaweed and Stab and Surf Stitch, I thought, genius. I mean, I have nothing against,
yeah,
you know, corporate interests and selling clothes. I love clothes, and I would love, you know, for a kind of a surf online retailer to actually smash it. And it seemed, like, on paper, to me, it seems really good. You have your wave forecasting thing, mm-hmm. You have your editorial thing in Stab, and then you have your kind of, you know, brand that's selling the lifestyle. So you have different people pushing lifestyle editorially and, you know, practically, I guess,
right,
in terms of Magic Seaweed's forecasting. And then funneling to, this is the look you want. And it's not a rude thing. It's not like you're building the dream, and then you actually have the dream
free,
there.
You know, you go to Stab Magic. It's free. It's not cost you anything. So you can just ignore the editorial and go to the good bits, you know?
Except for the fact that it seems ideally like it should work, and I would like it to work for them, and I just don't know. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's working necessarily, but I know nothing. But
I feel like the parts that are working is like they'll add a Channel Islands, you know, Dane Reynolds. You think it's a Dane Reynolds video, but it's really a Channel Islands video in the video feed. And, you know, it kind of goes under the radar, I think, oftentimes.
Yeah.
And there's a link to purchase boards, you know, or
which
whatever.
I mean, to me, good advertorial, if it worked, would be amazing. And I, you know, not that it's not working there, and maybe it will work. And, you know, the sale just happened, right? So maybe it's going to take them a minute to crank it up.
I think the only time it crosses the line is when you have a long sleeve Quicksilver t-shirt and it's a post.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's when it crosses the line. But, you know, like I said, you don't have to look at it if you don't want it.
Exactly.
and I haven't seen a lot of important stories there for a long time. So
right,
it's just fun. You know, it's just a fun kind of, you know, well-designed website with a nice voice, and it's a good, you know, good go-to place to get your, you know, milk and potatoes.
Yeah, well, we haven't seen any advertising on Beach Grit yet, but do you want to talk about that reason why you're out here in California? And
yeah, well, I've come out to California because it comes a point, we always had to monetize Beach Grit, because as much as we love to write, our wives are still looking over our shoulders. what the fuck are you doing? This isn't a hobby, and it's not a hobby, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, when we started Stab, you know, I was doing the sales for that, but we had to build Beach Grit up to a certain level of traffic, and we're getting really good traffic now. We're as big as some, you know, established sites. you know, according to similarweb.com.
Sure.
So there comes a point. So I've come out to meet the marketing people and just to see what people want at the moment and what we need. So I discovered the word deck.
Yeah.
You need a deck.
You do need a sales deck.
I'm unfamiliar brand deck. With that.
So
okay.
Press, if someone had said press kit, I would have gone, oh, fuck.
No, my wife has been hitting me over the head about decks for months. Like, where's your deck? Where's your deck? Where's your deck? And I never asked Derek about where our deck is because I think I don't want us to do a stinking deck. And me and Derek know what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're rebels.
Yeah.
And then Derek came out and heard about the deck. So.
But to be honest, I love the sales thing. I love talking to people. I love hanging out. You go to the factory. They show you all this stuff. I went to Stance today. It was incredible. Probably the most beautiful. Well, not probably. It was definitely the most beautiful workplace I'd ever been to. It was tennis, basketball court, personal trainer. Everyone, you know, is well dressed and seems really happy. And there's a chef and most of the people turn out to be your buddies over a period of time. And you help them do their job and sell some of their stuff, and they give you some cash, and it actually works really well.
And I think as edgy as both Derek and I maybe have been or are perceived to be in our different sort of paths and then our shared path, neither of us are, both of us are nothing but if we're not capitalists. And so, the idea of, to me, there's just a better way to do it, and that's what I want Beach Grit to be. And, I don't think whatever we do advertising wise, I love the brands. The brands are why surfing exists in so many ways, and the way it exists, and helping them just tell a better story to me is, it's just a win-win.
Well, yeah, I think we can definitely help brands build themselves. I think we can be really good brand builders.
Yeah.
So
good. What does that new way look like, do you think? What's the better way look like?
For me, the better way always looks like, and I've said it until it probably sounds cliche now. Maybe I've not said it here or to either of you, so it's good. To me, okay, the better way, the best way ever, and it went out of business, so it's obviously not the best way ever, is the J. Peterman catalog. Did you ever read the J. Peterman catalog when you were a kid?
I'm familiar with it, but no.
Yeah, so my mom was a big catalog person, and my household was not necessarily a magazine household. So these catalogs would come, and I would kind of read them like magazines. You have your JCPenney's and your Sears, which that's not a very good magazine. But then the J. Peterman catalog would come, and all it was, have you ever seen it?
No, but I'm listening with all ears.
J. Peterman catalog, J. Peterman was a company that, like an aggregator, I guess. They aggregated stuff from around the world and would resell it. In the catalog, kind of brand it their own. They'd find interesting stuff and just put the J. Peterman tag on it and send it out. And so, in Seinfeld, Elaine works for J. Peterman. But the catalog would come. All it would be, not a one picture in the magazine, drawings of everything, hand drawings of all the clothing or all the stuff they found, and a story that only tangentially related to the piece of clothing they were selling. So it'd be like some jungle hat or something drawn. And then, I'm there, New York City. It's hot, sweating. Some piece of literature for every single product in that entire thing. And so you read this thing and you have this experience. And the J. Peterman catalog to me has always been the, and again, it went out of business, so clearly it didn't work. But
do you have any?
Yeah, I do. I have one at home.
Oh, wow.
It was the pinnacle of, I loved that thing. And it happened to be, it was all one thing, right? The selling of this product and me getting excited about the product, reading these stories about the product was all one thing that wasn't, it wasn't artificial, and it wasn't, it wasn't this like bait and switch kind of thing where, hey, we're a cool, edgy website, but in the back door, we're feeding you to some shitty site to buy a shitty product.
Right.
Where to me, that's the ideal. It's products that we believe in, and not only it's editorial content too, but it's at some level, I love this one thing.
It's all about curation.
Totally. And I want you to have this thing because I do love things. We all love things.
Totally.
I think, I'm not a stinking commie. I like things.
Yeah, it's like, Electric has these particular watches, like an old man kind of fighter pilot watch or something.
Yeah.
I love them. I love them so much. I've been hitting Electric so hard over the head because I want to push them.
Yeah.
I ain't going to push them for free.
Yeah.
Right.
But I love them, and I really, things you really believe in. Kelly has a really cool little puffer jacket and a cool pea coat, that Czech pea coat. There's things like that. And Volcom will have a great pair of trunks or a great pair of jeans or something. So that's the stuff. We just want to curate it.
Yeah,
and we'll
totally
present it really well. Because you go to GQ and you see everything and everything looks amazing. You want to buy all their stuff because they curate it really well. They make J.Crew look good.
Yeah, interesting.
I think that's what, that's the way I felt. And who knows what will happen down the road. But to me, ideally, it's about moving one piece that you believe in as opposed to pushing a brand. Brands. I love Quiksilver, and I love Quiksilver for what they've done and what they stand for. And I mostly love Quiksilver probably for the way I felt about it when I was a kid, and coastal Oregon, you see that mountain on the wave and you feel sunny and warm, even though it's freezing cold rain outside. Like, there's something about, you know, attachment to the brand, for me at least, attaching to the brands as a way to attach to this broader surf culture, which, you know, being removed geographically kind of from it, I could just love it through these things and then go surf freezing cold slop Oregon, but still feel like I was part of this broader thing.
Totally.
Where, but in terms of, you know, being more kind of grown up, I think all the brands have a signature product, I feel. And it's more about, you know, okay, great, Billabong's fine, but what's Billabong's signature product? You know, what's the thing they do better than anybody else? Which, right. And they all have that, I reckon, or mostly.
Total side note, John O'Hurley, I think is his name, who played Jay Peterman in Seinfeld. Yeah. I literally heard this week that he purchased the Jay Peterman catalog.
It's so amazing. That is
so
totally
he might be
amazing.
Bringing it back.
I mean, I think somebody bought it. It went bankrupt and then it came out. It's so amazing that he owns it now, though.
Yeah.
Because it's I'll show you the magazine at home. It's an absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see him online, I think. You can go on and click on old. That's so good.
Do you guys, do you still read Stab? Spend time on stabmag.com?
I'm not one of those people. And when I started Stab, I never read the other surf mags. Didn't even open them. But online, you do have to be. Someone might get a piece of news that you're not aware of. So you do look, but in a kind of incidental way, you're not obsessed with it. And I generally don't read things. I'll click on things. And I've got that. I've got that. Ticking my boxes. You know, I'll just go through. Except for inertia's a bit tough. But.
Yeah,
I love Zach. But Zach's amazing. But it's very disappointing.
I agree. Well, they've gone down a disappointing path. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't always there. Do you subscribe to any of the print publications?
Surfing?
At this point, any print surf publications.
I had Zimeo for surfing and surfer, but they arrive in my email box. I'd never open them. I didn't do one.
Yeah,
I get the Surface Journal.
Do you?
Oh, the Surface Journal. Yeah, Surface Journal's amazing.
Yeah. Surface Journal is. I mean,
That's an important vehicle for our sport. I mean, Surface Journal and Matt Walshaw are two treasures. And it was funny because I was at the Journal today.
Mm.
And I went in, and it was like a family. They were all sitting around this long table, and it was Steve Pesman and Debbie Pesman and Jeff Devine and Brennan Thomas and Scott Hewlett, and it was just, oh my god, Steve Pesman, the father of it all. But without the Surface Journal and Matt Walshaw with the Encyclopedia of Surfing, there'd be no one chronicling the history.
I'd also almost kick in Quicksilver, like as
and
treasures.
And Pete Taras.
And Pete Taras.
Is that a joke?
No, seriously.
I love Pete Taras.
His ability to groom photographers, and I don't mean groom for obscene purposes. His ability to create amazing photographers out of little weedy kind of things. I was looking at a copy of Surfing today that Steve Sherman gave me. I was blown because I hadn't seen a print mag in probably 2 years, and I was blown away by the quality of the photography and the differing approaches by the different photographers. And I know Pete Taras has driven most of that. So I think photographically, Pete Taras is the most important person in surfing.
I think you're right.
Interesting. That's a bold claim. I liked that issue. I'm assuming the issue you're talking about is the one that profiles different photographers and does. Yeah, I haven't read a magazine in a long time either, and I opened that one the other day because I was getting my oil changed. That's the only reason, and I really enjoyed it. I'm surprised how much I enjoyed that. You received some grief about that. Video you posted of Joanne DeFay from the WSL. You said they emailed you and asked you to take down the video.
Well, I had a few doozies on there. I had Cowboys of the WSL, Jet Ski Cowboys of the WSL.
I missed that one.
And I had all the jet ski fails.
Yeah,
in France there's a couple. Yeah, there was one in Brazil, and it was so funny.
Jet Ski Cowboys of the WSL was one of my favorite things we've done.
Yeah. Great title, by the way.
It all happened.
That was your title, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was really funny. It was really a funny clip. It was like Derek. I wrote the story just because I'd seen two fails. I think it was in like one heat or one
pretty close. Yeah, John had one where he came off the back, and then there's the other one where maybe
Julian. No,
that was a Jadson maybe.
Yeah, Jadson.
Jadson was pumping to it, and the guy just nosedived the ski. And you know, if you've ever driven a ski, how fucking easy it is to do that. But in front of everyone, the way it just went underwater.
Like, yeah,
it was amazing, and it was really funny. But then we had two. We had that,
and we had Joanne DeFay,
and then we had one more.
We did, yeah.
We had a triple.
Oh, we had Kelly's Hail Marys.
Yeah. And which was all, I mean, it was all positive, kind of. Like,
except for two of them.
Yeah.
So what's their gripe, and why take it down? Like, why listen to their gripe?
Well, you know, they do own the footage, so they do have...
Oh, okay, so
it was WSL footage. But, and I'm a fairly timid, fearful kind of man, so if anyone says, pull stuff down or I'll sue you. I say, yes, I'll do it immediately. Can I get you anything else? Can I send you a t-shirt as well, my friend?
Well, see, you don't
sorry, my friend.
You don't seem like a timid person, though. Like, just looking at the website as a viewer, you seem pretty audacious.
Well, I'll have a crack. You know, I don't mind having a swing. I don't mind getting the bat and having a bit of a swing. But, you know, at the end of the day, someone's seen it, and it all had their run anyway. They had probably had as many views as they're going to have.
Yeah.
And there is a thing called fair usage, as I've discovered after, that you can use, like, you know, the jet ski driver thing. That was probably fine to use that. And if you're making just a comment about things, but if you're just running things wholesale, you shouldn't do it. So I think we were totally within our rights to do it. But if, you know, if a man getting a legal letter and me costing $1,000 to get someone to look at it, yeah, screw it.
Okay. What's the most amount of grief that you've received for something that you've published?
On Beach Grit?
Yeah.
That's funny. It's a funny thing, I think, is the fact that I think Derek and I have been at the game long enough where we kind of know the stuff that's... I don't know. Maybe we don't.
I don't know. We're pretty good at knowing the line. We can... Because we're never... the whole thing is we never want to intentionally burn anyone.
Mm.
You know, and extramarital sex and drug use and all that stuff are totally off limits, I think. We never want to hurt anybody. But if something's funny, you know, if someone's a bit of a goofball or whatever, we'll play with it. You know, we like to play. So there hasn't been a big piss someone off thing since the McFanning thing, which was stab anyway. So
right.
I can't think we've pissed anyone off, have we?
I don't think of Beach Grit, no.
No.
That's surprising. I mean, one title that in the last month that I could just remember off the top of my head was Is John John Florence Gay?
Yeah.
And I opened
is
it up.
He is? Heck, it was the photo.
That was your title. Great photo with John C. Reilly. Where'd you find that thing?
Oh, just Googled John John Florence. First one came out and I went, oh God, I have to write Is John John
yeah,
Florence
it's
Gay?
Amazing.
Derek is a genius when it comes to finding the photos to use.
Like, yeah.
I always feel real bad when I, because, you know, I'm in California, he's in Australia,
yeah.
So I wake up first and publish something, and I'm always like, oh, if I have a good story, especially, I always think Derek could have found such a better picture for this.
You can replace it later.
I mean, yeah, but it's kind of a bummer, I always feel like. Once you kick it out and make it live, then even if Derek replaces it later, yeah. it's like...
Because it goes on Facebook with that original photo.
Yeah.
Well, what about... Can you just use any photo that you find on Google Images?
No.
Theoretically, no.
Okay.
But, you know, if it's... generally, if a company owns it or it's some photographers we know...
Yeah.
Then it's generally okay. But yeah. I'll always ask someone.
Yeah, but like that John C. Reilly photo, I can't imagine where that came from.
I think it was a party photo.
It would have been opening night party, and it would have probably been an Associated Press photo.
Yeah, I think I got it from a newspaper or something.
Yeah, okay.
But that story was about, it wasn't anything to do with John John Florence being gay.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with being gay. And actually, there's a lot of awesome things about being gay, and I could sit here and list them all night. But the whole thing was about keywords that get you to Beach Grit.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, on Google Analytics, you see a little thing that says, you know, keyword, how people are getting to your site. One was, is John John Florence gay? And landed at Beach Grit.
Yeah.
So, well, that's a funny one. I'll write that. And there's other things like big black studs, white pussy, and
yeah.
And all these odd things, and you get to Beach Grit.
Yep.
I found that article actually really compelling. Like, I read all of it, and I was like, wow, this is fascinating information.
It's totally odd, and it's all true. Like, I mean, Derek and I both go back and forth, the show, like, just screenshotting and, you know, tossing over the stuff that get people to our site, which is so weird.
I don't know if it's because in the early days, I was just doing some funny tags, you know, in the back end. You tag stuff, and I was supposed to probably write black cocks and what.
It's John John Florence Gay.
But I would argue if you type that in to Google search, there's a million websites that would pop up before yours.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's weird.
People go deep.
I guess so. Yeah.
You know what? I've done some funny links when I've mentioned certain people and made hot links, and I've made it to gay websites.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to do more of that now.
Sorry, Peter Taras. It's been some funny ones for you.
The comment section is something that on stabmag.com has become like an attraction in and of itself. It's almost the primary attraction for me. I'll just go straight down to that and read that instead of watching the whatever the video is or whatever. And a lot of those commenters I now see on Beach Grit, they've transitioned over. Is that something that you have any interest in policing at all, or do you let it run rampant, or what are your thoughts on it?
No, I mean, for me, I've never been interested in comments. Like, it's funny, especially, you know, I think Stab kind of birthed the livid commenter kind of where people would just go, apeshit. You know, and when I first started writing for Stab, and I think I started writing for Stab before there was actually a stabmag.com, but I remember, you know, whatever I had on there first, and I'd look at it and there'd be like 100 comments of fucking fag and fucking gay and everything, and I thought that was funny, but like it just seemed real pointless to me. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, it's funny, this real rage is funny, but aside from that, it's utterly pointless. Where oddly, Beach Grits, when we started Beach Grit, there was no moderation on the comments, but it seemed like people just wanted a different tone, and I learned early days more from our comments than I did from any other surf website. Like, I would get on and people were having, you know, for my money, super highbrow, interesting conversations, being really funny, really witty, being, you know, edgy, but never falling over into just utter kind of crass ugliness.
Right.
Where I really totally loved the way our comments, and it was, you know, purely natural. And then recently one of the old Stab commenters, Negatron, is he moderating?
Yeah, he's moderating. he emailed me and, you know, said he wanted to. So funny, there's people who've got a career out of commentating. But he's a smart guy and he's written a couple of things for us.
I've seen.
But he said, you know, he wants to get out of the Stab forums. The Stab actually made him commentator of the month or something, comments of the month. But he said he wanted to create a forum on Beach Grit where people could have really cool conversations, but if anyone was being a dick, they could just clip them. Because, you know, Stab had just got all these odd people, and I think non-English speaking people said, "No, you're racist. No, fuck you, Aussie." You know, sort of thing.
Right.
And it got pretty ugly, I think. And so this guy, Negatron, he just watches it, you know, he just sits at the back and he'll put comments in and he'll drive the conversation. It's just like having a, you know, cool guy at the party, just kind of making sure everyone's doing the right thing.
Interesting.
It seems to me like the comment game has evolved beyond just a, like, the fuck all democracy that Stabs was.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I think it just devolved into something that, I mean,
people made names
like
themselves on that.
They did, and it's great. But I think people don't want that anymore. I think they can get that from Stab. If you want to go on and just have a full shit fight with a bunch of random strangers, Stab exists, and that's good for that. But I don't think there needs to be another one. And if Beach Grits would have become that, I would have clipped our comments altogether because I have no. I mean,
it's ugly. You know, fighting is never pretty.
Yeah.
Well, no, but there's elements in it that are interesting, and I don't like the negativity for negativity's sake, but there's a lot of humor in it. Yeah,
There's nothing wrong with negativity. When it's just dumb, people are swearing at each other. That's just dumb. That's not fun.
Right.
You know, I'm really into negativity. Like I was telling Chaz, I'm into the power of negative thinking, and I've written about the power of negative thinking. You know, you've written a story about teaching your daughter to give up.
Yep.
Give up early. So there's a big thing, you know, in Australia, and really I think we got it from America. You can't be negative. You got to be positive, you know. But negative can just be having a different opinion.
Right.
It's not necessarily. But if you can articulate something really well, it's great to read. You know, I like to read things on the far right and the far left, and then squish myself somewhere in the middle.
Sure.
Which is at this point I've grown so fond of Beach Grit's comments that I will, like Negatron, I'm so thankful that he's there doing that job, because it would really hurt me at this point if they turned just pointless and dumb. I really get on there and enjoy reading the repartee, and you know, people going back and forth and both, you know, discussing whatever the topic of the piece is. But then also, it seems like it's a fun place.
We have some great guys. There's one guy who's a hip university professor, Mariano
Landa.
He's amazing.
Is he a university professor?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and there's you know, Super Junior and, well, you know, all these people. What's some of the other guys? They're really funny.
There's so many. Long Tom.
Yeah. Long Tom's amazing. Yeah.
What's Negatron's background?
He's a plumber from New Zealand.
Interesting. Yeah. Fascinating.
But you know, often those guys who are a smart man who's a plumber, but they just love everything surf, and they examine everything.
Yeah.
And they have critical opinions and a really critical eye. And because they're just everyday guys, and they're not impacted by what the surf industry is doing
right,
or what people are emailing us, they can have a really cool take on stuff.
Yep.
I really like reading them too.
Had you advertised his role in the comment section?
No,
because I had never heard that.
No,
that's all news to me.
I'd like to moderate your comments. And I said, I can't pay you.
Yeah.
But that's
somewhere down the track, I will, though.
But that's important. I mean, I'm glad to know that now. Like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because it has taken on a life of its own, and that's now kind of a new direction.
Yeah, I mean, we always hoped that the comments would take off, but it's like opening a store. You know, people don't know you exist, and we didn't spend any money in marketing.
Right.
So it's been great that, you know, commentators from Stab have come over, and they've talked about it, and they've, you know.
Yeah.
I've really liked it.
You guys kind of have evolved platforms in your career from like print to digital, obviously, but even digital's evolved since you've launched BeachGrid in the last year, I suppose. Are there any limitations with this current platform, or in what ways do you want to expand BeachGrid?
A video play is going to be kind of the next evolution of BeachGrid, doing, you know, original video content. And I think Derek and I both have things that we want to do and cards up the sleeve about how that'll look and feel. That'll be way different from anything out there right now, which I think that's the next, which is, you know, it was in the works from the start. And I'm super thankful, frankly, that we've had this much time to kind of build a tone that I don't think necessarily existed at the start. I think Derek and I grew into the tone that BeachGrid is,
sure,
you know, over this year, right?
Like, yeah, we just wanted to be antidepressive. That's the whole thing.
And it is, to me. Like, even when we do funny stories that are, you know, like Rory, the third kind of leg of BeachGrid, Rory's negativity, like, or him looking at stuff, you know, a little more darker maybe than either Derek or I naturally look at stuff, is super funny and compelling.
Yeah, he's a John Fante.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But even Rory's stuff is antidepressive on the BeachGrid forum, where if you stuck Rory's stuff, I think, on just out there, you know, people think, oh, he's an angry kind of man who's kind of living the dream a little bit, but a little bit angry at a lot of things. But yeah, in BeachGrid, to me, it reads even, and maybe I've drunk our own Kool-Aid too much, but it seems that it's not very depressive. Like, it just seems funny. It seems like it's Rory.
Just go back to Rory Puckett, and the guy's incredible. Every single day, he can write print-worthy copy.
Really?
I'm just going to go, fuck, really? That's so good. And sometimes, you know, because he does it every single day.
Yeah.
Without fail, he's reliable, and he's so fucking good. And he gets more hits from people that I hear or email, like, Rory this, Rory that. You know, I'm like, he ain't that good.
He's in Kauai, right?
He's in Kauai, yeah.
Yeah, and he's not the pro surfer Rory Parker from the 90s.
It's
different
not.
Rory Parker.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'd be nice if he was. I wish that he was a pro surfer from the 90s.
Yeah.
It'd be a better part of the story.
I love the Blood Feud series that you guys have introduced. That's always awesome. There's been some good ones, so I always appreciate that. It's like you take this super mild social media disagreement and turn it into something super massive.
The Ricardo Toledo one was funny.
So good.
Who was he feuding with? I forget.
Alex Gray.
Yeah.
That was an early one.
Yeah. That might have been the first one.
Maybe, yeah.
I might have been the
I think it was, actually. And then there was a long period where I feel like there wasn't another one, maybe.
Because it wasn't meant to be a series. Right. It was just a headline.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then anything after, any two people or any entities fighting after that. It took a while to get up to be a series. But it's one of my favorite things, too.
Well, one of the recent ones was like Jay Alvarez, who I didn't even know who that was. And then Ethan Carlston, who's from San Clemente, who I've known since he was young.
That's really funny.
But then, like, I haven't seen him in a couple of years, and then I saw that and I looked at his Instagram and he's got like tens of thousands of followers. I'm like, what? How did this kid get so famous and so angry and like weird? Now he's living in Bali and like the whole thing was
that
crazy.
One I don't mean to out the source, but I don't think there was nothing particular in there that would get the source in trouble, right? No, it's just,
I don't know,
two pretty boys. It was Pete Terrace. I'd never heard my daughter or stepdaughter, 14 years old, loves Jay Alvarez, or doesn't love him, but you know, follows him. So I had been aware of Jay Alvarez and his girlfriend, or whatever. Like, Alexis, Alexis. She had showed me their stuff, and like, this is what the kids are, you know, that's what the kids are looking at. So I was vaguely aware of him. And then Pete Terra sent me over, look at this, like a screenshot of Carlston going off. And I was like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Who is this guy? And so then I had to Google it and figure it out. And then it was super funny.
I think we got three or four out of it.
Oh, we milked that one so good. I'm sure we'll get a fifth one, too. That one's not done yet.
Ethan surfed incredibly well, like, as a teenager. Like, he was awesome. You know, super nice kid, too.
Yeah.
So, Chaz, now some time has passed since your book release, maybe 18 months or something.
Long time.
Has there been any Hawaiian backlash since?
No,
okay,
nothing.
Good.
I say, I mean, who knows? There could be some out there just waiting for me to say no, and then but I talk to Eddie fairly regularly, and we have laughs, and no, nothing.
Good.
Yeah, I'm all. Which means maybe, I guess, it's not good. Maybe it just means that I didn't write the right book.
They're lying in wait. Maybe you don't know.
Either they're lying in wait, or that I wrote a sissy book, and Yeah, I didn't go far enough.
What's next? Do you have anything in the works?
You know, I thought I've had lots of things in the works for the last 18 months, and then I've kind of realized recently that Beach Grit is what it is, and I love it. It's really, really fun, and it takes a lot of work, which is, you know, I think it can maybe seem that it's just a little funny piss take, but it's a lot of work, and it takes kind of a full attention span, which it's taken me kind of the year to realize that I kind of realized that this summer. So I'm fairly just triple down on Beach Grit right now.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I do that too, oftentimes underestimate workload, you know, like even with the podcast, it's like, oh, I could just layer that on top of everything else. And then it just,
you just can't.
Yeah.
And for something to be successful, I reckon if you're not all in, then you're not all in.
Yeah. What's your current relationship like with surfing at this point? How often do you surf and
I think it's surfing the magazine.
No.
I surf, I live at Bondi, so I'm 5 minutes from the beach, and I surf pretty much every day.
Good for you.
It's pretty much my only exercise, and I'm so into the technical side of surfing. Like I just think about it all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I love it so much, but I'm happy. I don't drive around looking for waves. For me, it's not about perfection. It's just going down the same beach every day and just working on technique in a really fun way, because it's so much fun. It's so much funner when you're focused and you paddle hard, and it took me until about a year ago to realize that. It's just get out there and sit and talk shit with everyone else, kind of be dissatisfied with my surfing. And then about a year and maybe 2 years ago, I realized you have to focus, can't fuck around, you paddle hard, and you try hard and you try different things, and it makes surfing so much more satisfying.
Awesome. You guys are both riders. Give me one reading or book recommendation. Doesn't even have to be surfing related.
You want to go first? I think of something?
I'll give you the one Derek gave me that I read and just would weep at every day. So I'm just going to steal it from you. The Gallery.
The Gallery, John Horne
Burns. Yeah, John Horne Burns. It's
Say the title again?
The Gallery.
Okay.
It's hard to find even a bit. I mean, you can find it online, I'm sure. But it took me a dig. It was I think when Derek recommended it to me, it was wouldn't have been pre-Amazon
days. Remember, it became Travis Ferro's favorite
book
too, didn't it?
Yeah, it's so good. I don't recommend very many books, but that one... Some bits are better than others. It's kind of a collection of short stories more than a full kind of book narrative arc wise. But
drove him mad and he killed himself. Huh?
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, it was so good that he couldn't.
It's just extraordinary.
Like, just like Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell.
Yeah,
so good that you can never match it, and you just have to kill yourself.
What's the author's name?
John Horne Burns.
Got it.
Horne Burns.
Yeah, the Gallery. It's amazing.
Do you have a recommendation of your own, or are you?
It's funny because I never have a book that I'll read again and again and again. But I think it's pretty hard to go past Lolita.
Mm.
I think that's just Nabokov. It's just such a beautifully written book. And probably if I can give you two, if that's all right.
Yeah, please.
Menachem Begin wrote this great book about the Irgun, the Jewish terrorist group in the 30s and 40s. It's called The Revolt, and it's about fighting the British and the Arabs. And for the creation of Israel, and it's such a stirring book. And I think, I have to study, I'm not a Jew or anything, but I've studied modern history a lot, and I think it's a righteous cause, and it's so incredible to have terrorism explained in a way that seems compelling and righteous, and I loved it, and like I said, I've got no kind of bone to pick with either of those particular sides, but I found it really, really compelling.
Yeah.
And a third book while we're there is Golda Meir's book, My Life.
Okay.
And that's someone who's terrified to go outside the door. I think she was Russian or Ukrainian or something, and moving to America. And she was so thankful of living in America when she was young, because it took him in and it looked after her and it helped create the State of Israel. And I don't mean to be Israel-centric, but they're just really moving stories that I think people miss in our world.
Yeah. Excellent. I'll add those books in the show notes for any listeners who want to link out to them, purchase them. Who's going to win Pipeline?
It's one of those things you can't really call it. I mean, earlier
call it, man. You got to call it.
Tell me what the waves are going to be later. I think it's going to be Gabrielle or Julian.
That's Mick.
Really?
I think so.
But I'm praying for Felipe Salido.
You're praying for Felipe to win Pipe or just win
To be honest, I love Felipe. He gets me so excited to watch him surfing.
Yeah.
There's no one else, no other heat I want to watch more than Felipe Salido. Yeah. Just the way he just greases the landings of his airs and, oh God, it's going to spasm.
The way he lands his airs is so
and the energy,
wildly
you see
impressive.
It makes you want to go surfing.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I'm putting my money on John.
Oh,
really?
Him.
How about that?
Oh, John
at Pipe?
Is he gay?
I don't know. I read an article one
Someone
time.
Someone needs some stretch words.
Okay, final question for everybody interviewed. What was the last surfboard that you rode?
Me?
Both of you.
Me? 5'6", super thinned out puddle jumper by Matt Bialas. Pretty much don't ride anything but Matt Bialas' boards. I just adore the man. Actually, just went snowboarding with him.
Oh, yeah?
And I just fall under his spell every single time I'm near him. I think he's wonderful.
Where'd you ride that board? Here? Or?
Yeah, I've been surfing Seaside every morning.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
In Cardiff.
I surfed last a 5'10 bull shark shaped by Vulcan.
Which is,
do you know Vulcan?
I follow him on Instagram.
It's amazing.
Really interesting
boards. Amazing. Yeah, I saw one from Board Porn on Instagram. Saw one and just... like commented I need that and then I got hooked up with him. The guy who shapes him is an amazing guy. So interesting.
Talking about Seaside, surfing Seaside today, I saw Sherman posted an Instagram of Curran surfing there this morning.
Yeah, he was there. Curran was there this morning, then he was there this afternoon on skimboard.
I saw somebody else talk about Ollie Kurtz talked about surfing next to Curran. Watching Curran go straight is better than watching any of the top 44.
I missed the Curran bit. I was there too early.
Bummer. Okay, yeah, he was riding. He posted a photo of him on that skimboard. Not on it, but with it. And I'm like, was he riding that thing? But he had a leash attached to it, so he had to have been surfing.
Ryan Birch is out there too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's surfing pretty good.
Yeah, surfer. I mean, I'm always interested to watch Ryan Birch surf.
Yeah.
It's always interesting.
Somebody sent me who.
I was like, who's this motherfucking catching waves so early?
Ashton. Ashton did a story on Beach Grid on Tom Curran riding that boogie board in Mexico.
Yeah, in Mex with like pants and a hat.
Yeah, totally weird. Yeah.
So weird.
But the way he surfed that boogie looked so fun.
I know. Legend.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure. I'm flattered to ask this.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Thanks, thrilled to have it. Yeah. Right on. Thank you so much, Derek, for taking time out of your busy travel work schedule while you were here in the U.S. To sit with me for an hour and do this. And thank you, Chaz, as well. Always entertaining. Really appreciate you guys and the work that you do on beachgrit.com. All right. And then come over to surfsplendorpodcast.com. I'll have a link to Chaz Smith's episode of Surf Splendor. And then all the things that we discussed, all the media and images that we discussed in this show will be available on surfsplendorpodcast.com. Also, make sure to leave a comment about today's show. Engage in this conversation between Derek, Chaz, and I. Leave your feedback for them. I will make sure to send it to them and make sure that they see it. All right. I believe that is all that I have for now. Get into the Pipe Masters event. It should be starting tomorrow from when we post this episode. I don't know, maybe you're listening to it later, but Pipe is happening. So we're psyched on Pipe. And the Piahi event was unreal, actually. And I'll get into that more with Scott Bass next week in Surf News. But hopefully you're enjoying the Hawaii season. And hopefully you're actually getting some waves for yourself. So until next week, that is what I encourage you to do. Paddle out, get a couple waves, and shred on.